and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life. Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Above the Bar podcast. It's your host, Sean. I appreciate everybody bellowing up to the bar today. Today we have with us Robert Miller of Project Grand Slam, also of Follow Your Dreams podcast. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sean. How you doing?
Wonderful. You're definitely a man who knows how to make an entrance here. Like, right, and I'm like, well, do I need to send him an email? Did he make it? Are we going to make it here?
I made it just under the wire, huh?
Just under the wire. And as we know at the beginning of the show, we got a new bottle of Telemar Dew, folks. Make sure you tag us with all your Telemar Dews. Someday they'll actually sponsor us and maybe I won't have to pay for these bottles. So do a little housekeeping before we get going here, Robert. We're going to start a new thing here, folks. We all know, let's see, I go the wrong direction every time. We have the metal clock in the background that my wife put together for us. And my beautiful bride is going to put a sticker up here. We've got a new thing, folks. I'm going to call it a sticker and a cause. This is the name I've given it. And most likely everybody will tell me it's a horrible name, but I like it. So if you've got anything going on out there, any kind of a project, something you're working on, I don't care what it is, send me your sticker. We'll put it on the clock behind us like we did the guys from Talking Beards. We put their sticker up. Robert, if you got a good sticker for Project Grand Slam, send me a sticker. We'll put it up on the clock. And we're going to call this Sticker and a Cause. You send me your sticker, whatever you got going on, whether you're selling something, whether you got a cause for something, you know, you're supporting an organization, you send me the sticker and I'll give you a free plug and all four of my listeners will check it out.
Can I send you a CD? Would that work?
Maybe you could send me. Do they still make CDs?
Yeah, they do. Not too many people buy them, but they still make them.
Before we get into everything, you'll appreciate this story then, Robert. So I have a tattoo on my arm. Let me see which arm it's on. It's on this one. So this tattoo right here, the Cocopelli, and I don't know if you can read it. It says Rainmaker above it.
Okay.
So I love music. I'm lucky I can play a radio, like the old joke. You know, I'm lucky I can play the radio, but I love music. So that tattoo is from my uncle, who was a Berklee graduate,
really?
Berklee School of Music.
Okay.
Had an uncle. He was a phenomenal musician, Berklee School of Music. He really, you know, was way into it. And he was the where you started. How old were you when you decided to get into rock and roll?
When I started getting into rock and roll?
Well, decided to become a rock star, I should say.
Oh, well, I started playing rock and roll when I was about 12, but I didn't get to be a rock star till I was a lot older than that.
Well, how old were you?
I was in my 60s.
So think about that, folks. That's why it's Follow Your Dream podcast. Robert was in his 60s and decided to follow his dreams.
Yep.
So my uncle's band, he was the bassist for a band out of Baltimore called Tom Wright and the Rainmakers.
Okay.
And they actually, and before that, they were Blind Dog Blues Band. And I still talk to Tom. Tom's still with us. My uncle passed away many moons ago. But I used to carry around a case of their CDs in the trunk of my car, trying to sell these and get everybody to know about them. But these guys, they were good. They opened for James Brown when I was about 13, 14 years old, Battle
Very
of the Band
cool.
thing.
Okay.
So I, not understanding where I was at this point, in Baltimore, there's a concert place called Pier 6 Pavilion. Don't know if you ever played there or not, but it's a big open air amphitheater in the Inner Harbor. But I actually got to be backstage with them and James Brown the entire thing. And I saw the limousine with the hot tub. It was a real deal. So let's talk about
Mr. Excitement, James Brown.
I got to watch the sound check. James Brown's sound check was every bit as good as watching the show.
Did he do the whole dance thing?
He didn't do the dance thing, but have you ever seen the movie about his life, the more recent one with the guy who passed away from Black Panther? I can't think of his name right now.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that movie.
If you get a chance to check the movie out, really, really good movie. Okay. But what's crazy about it is the guy who was his band leader, I got to see him. He's a little short guy, and he was every bit as in control as James was. Like, when he was out there and he was telling those folks what to do, it was game on. This is how this was going to go down.
That was James Brown had the tightest act in showbiz. Okay.
Oh, it was so much fun. Have you seen him? Did you get to see him in concert?
I never saw him live. I mean, I did see him on TV so many times, of course, but
twice.
He was something else.
I saw him twice.
Good for you.
I loved it. But love music. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, well, what do we want to go into first? Is it, we want to talk Project Grand Slam, or we want to talk about your podcast? Which one do you want to get into first?
Makes no difference to me. Project Grand Slam was where it all started. So
let's
maybe
talk
that
about
makes
Project
more
Grand
sense.
Slam. Cool. So how did that come to be?
Well, you want to know about the name first, or do you want to know about the band?
I want to know all of it, because at some point, I know me, I'm going to squirrel and we're going to hook a hard left here at some point. So let's keep it going as best as we can with Project Grand Slam.
So here's the deal. I played music my whole life, but it was basically a hobby, an avocation. I wanted to be a rock star in the worst way, but you know, life gets in the way. That's what happens to everybody. And I put my dream to the side. I had other stuff going on in my life. I was married. I had kids. I had a job. I had a mortgage, all the usual stuff. But I always wanted to play, and I always kept playing from a very early age. My father was a musician. He played on the weekends, played trumpet. And because of that, I learned how to play trumpet. And I played trumpet in junior high and high school. But, you know, this little group from Liverpool, England came out in the 1960s, kind of changed everything.
Little group.
Little group.
I mean, four guys?
Yeah.
Long hair?
I think we're four guys. That's exactly right.
Long hair?
You know, the funny thing is, if those same four guys came out today, all the promoters would say only one question, okay? How many tickets can you sell? Not what kind of music do you play? Are you any good? Are you going to change the world? It's how many tickets can you sell? That's unfortunately the name of the game in music and so many things today. But when that group came out, very suddenly, it was no longer cool to play the trumpet. So I taught myself the guitar. And
Chicks don't drink trumpets?
What's that?
I said chicks don't dig trumpets?
Not back then. Everybody wanted to play the guitar back then. Okay. And I figured out that's what I wanted to do too. And I became a bass player simply because as a result of playing the trumpet, I knew the treble clef. You know, there's two clefs, treble clef and bass clef. And we knew that one of the guys in the Beatles played bass, and my friends were all struggling just to learn how to play the treble clef and guitar. So I volunteered to play the bass, and that's how I became a bass player. A lot of thought went into that. Anyway, I kept playing for years and years and years, but, you know, I wasn't really going anywhere. I wasn't doing anything. It was more like a hobby, that kind of thing. And then I finally made a decision. Again, when I turned 60, I said, okay, if I'm not going to do it now, when the heck am I going to do it? How much more time have I got to mess around with this? And I did two things. Number one, I formed a 1960s cover band called Side B. And if you're old enough, you can remember that records used to have a side A and a side B.
And we just thought,
what's that?
My 11-year-old who likes to sneak down and play video games while I'm trying to podcast. This is my life, Robert, is they will not leave me be at any moment. Give me a record. So for those of you who don't know what a record is, this
exactly.
is a record.
Isn't that sad? Take that record out. There you go.
There's so fun.
The A side was the one that had all the hits on it, and the B side was the one that had all the interesting stuff on it, okay? That's just the way it was. So we formed the side B. We played that music for a few years, and then I decided that I really wanted to do my own thing, and I formed this band called Project Grand Slam. So how did I get the name? I was a big fan of the James Bond movies.
Nice.
Did you used to see the James Bond movies?
All of them. Okay. Love James Bond.
Well, okay. Do you remember the movie Goldfinger?
Absolutely.
Okay. Goldfinger was all about the plot to steal the gold from Fort Knox. Okay. And in the movie, the plot to steal the gold was called Project Grand Slam.
I did not know that.
Well, I said, that's a very cool name for a band, you know, because I didn't want to call it the Robert Miller Quartet or something like that. I said, I need a cool name. I said, Project Grand Slam. And I formed the band. And then about 6 months later, I watched the movie again. And guess what? I was wrong.
It's not Project Grand
Slam? In the movie, the plot to steal the gold is called Operation Grand Slam.
Oh.
And I said to myself, oh, no, what am I going to do now? I had already named the band. So I said, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to Google Operation Grand Slam. And then I find out that Operation Grand Slam was the nickname that somebody gave to this genocidal program in Africa where like thousands of people got killed. And I said, okay, that's a good reason not to name your band Operation Grand Slam. You don't want to name your band after a genocidal program. So I just kept Project Grand Slam. And everybody used to always thinks that, well, he must have named it after sports, you know.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Baseball, there's tennis and stuff like that. No, it had nothing to do with that. It was all the James Bond movie. And the nice thing was I put together a band. I actually took an ad out in Craigslist because I wanted to surround myself with a whole new group of people. I had had the band from 2007, but in 2015, I decided I needed to restructure the band. So I took an ad out in Craigslist, and about 30 people came down. We did this in a rehearsal studio. And out of that, I was able to find the nucleus to form my band. And what I was looking for, because I was past 60 at the time. And I said, the last thing I want is to have just this old guy up on a stand, okay, surrounded by other old guys. I mean, nobody's going to care about us. I said, I wanted young people. I wanted that youth. I wanted that vitality, that energy that comes from young people. And in New York City, which is where I live, the city attracts so many people from so many places. So I was able to find a group of extremely talented, young, mainly foreign-born musicians, and that's how I came to form Project Grand Slam. And from there, it's just been one heck of a ride because I started writing music again. We started recording music again. Here we are 5 years down the road. I've got 10 albums that we've put out, and one of them was a Billboard number one. I've got over 4 million video views, over a million wow. Spotify streams. We've got over 50,000 Facebook fans. We've played festivals and concerts around the world, and we've opened for acts like Edgar Winter and Blues Traveler, Boney James, really? Mindy Hebert. So I've been living La Vida Loca.
Have you ever got up here to Saratoga Jazz Fest?
I haven't been to the Saratoga Jazz Fest. No, not that far yet. But if you can get me in, I'll play the next time they have it. How's that?
That's where I got to. So it's put on. Have you ever heard of Fryhofer's Bread?
Sure.
So Fryhofer's Stefan, we call Stefan sexual chocolate. He says, that's awesome. It's never too late. How you get these guys, Murph? We will talk later, my brother. I will explain it all to you. But
hey,
yeah,
Stefan, he offered me a lot of money.
Was a lot of money. It was all the money I have in my pocket. So that's why this is going to be on the cheap. I love you, brother, man. Stefan used to be one of my old partners back in my CSX days. We used to go do a lot of eating together. So, it's just like if you ever get a chance, because your sound is a jazz sound, and what I'm trying to do is pull up my iTunes here real quick. If I can't get it on the computer, I'll pull it up on my phone. Let me make sure so I don't get in trouble here. Robert, do I have your permission to play a little bit of your music so no one comes after me?
Let's see. Do I want to have your audience hear my music? Let me think about that. Yeah, I think we can do that.
We
think that'll work.
That's okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure, because I had it earlier. Now we celebrated my oldest son's 25th birthday today, and I was playing it for my kids. I was like, "Well, check this out. Tell me what you think. This, that, and the other." And they were like, "They liked it because I love the sound you guys have. Is there any song you think I should play? I've got up as soon as I popped up. The first one was Captain of Her Heart."
Well, that's a little bit of an old one. That's cool. It's kind of a nice, smooth kind of thing. Nice vocal. If you got any of the newer albums, the newest album that we put out is called East Side Sessions.
East Side Sessions.
And we had a big single from that album called "I'm Falling Off of the World." So if you have that one,
East Side Sessions,
that would be cool to put up. And for your audience, look, my music is a fusion of rock and jazz with a twist of Latin thrown in and a New York City groove.
All right, let's see how this works for us. Can you hear that?
A little low. Turn it up.
Here, we're going to swap this. So the computer, so I thought that the way I had it set up, that it would come through my headphones. So we're going to swap it because that's what we do. We swap. And Jeanette is going to be your international guest today. Jeanette is originally from on the other side of the pond. One day, Jeanette, if I'm allowed, we'll have to have you come on and we can talk about the Royals because I'm so infatuated by this entire thing and there's no reason for it. And then I watched the whole thing with like Brosnan, whatever the heck his name is, like running away. And I laughed so hard at that today. I was like, this is amazing. All right, let's see if this is better. How's that sound?
That's better. Yeah, hold it up near the mic. You got it.
That's my cousin Heather right there. So that'll give you a little taste there, folks, of
you know what that reminds me of?
Huh?
You know, Phil Spector was that great producer from the 60s. So, you know, back then, everybody listened to music on little transistor radios. So when he finished a song, instead of playing it on the big monitors in his studio, he would play it on a transistor radio because that's how the audience was going to hear
it. Oh, I didn't realize that.
And you know what? That's exactly what it sounded like. It was like you were holding a little transistor radio, okay? And hadn't heard my stuff on a transistor before, so that was pretty cool.
There you go, modern transistor radio.
Exactly.
Sidebar, as I was thinking about Jeanette that's listening to this, we have gone international for – left turn here for all of our listeners. We have gone international. The other day I looked at our stats and we had 2 downloads in Brazil and 2 in Netherlands. I think I know who the Netherlands folks are. Transistor makes me feel so old. Come on, Jeanette. I know better than that. I see you every week, at least one day a week. There's no way that's ever happened. She's so much fun and she puts up with me on this show. So. But it's such a we went international, so now you're international if you weren't already. Not that I think if you've had 4 million downloads that it didn't go international. So now you said your bandmates, and I think this is interesting and such a great, because I looked over and I've posted a lot of pictures of your band, you guys playing together. Where is everybody from?
All over the place. The current lineup, Our singer is Mexican-American.
She's beautiful.
She's terrific. Her name is Marilyn Castillo. My drummer is from Puerto Rico. My guitar player is from Western Canada. I have two keyboard players, one from Venezuela and the other from Cuba by way of Italy. And my percussionist is also from Mexico. And my saxophone player is from a place called Dallas, Texas.
Well, that's about as international as you get right there.
Exactly.
Now, do you pick on the saxophone player since your dad was a trumpet player, like, and you know how to play this instrument that's similar? Do you make sure, like, he's on point?
Listen, he's terrific. They're all terrific. They're fabulous musicians. And I love playing with these folks. And we've played, as you pointed out, we really have played kind of all over the world. My most favorite experience of all was we played a festival in Serbia 2 years ago.
Really?
And what for was that all like? Of you out there that really know Serbia very well, you'll know that it's in Eastern Europe. And it was an amazing experience because, first of all, the festival was set inside a castle. That was about
cool.
700 years old. So you walk across the moat, you go into the castle, and it's got all the castle grounds there. And they had two stages set up next to one another so that they had, you know, one band playing on a stage while another band was setting up on the next stage. And here we are, we're playing in front of like 20,000 people in Serbia, and they're from Serbia and Bulgaria and all those surrounding countries. Almost none of them spoke English. Most of them, of course, had no idea who we were. But by the end of the set, you know, we had a standing ovation.
Nice.
And we come down the stairs, and there's a whole line of people that want to, you know, take our autograph and take pictures with us. It just shows you how international music is.
It really is.
They didn't need to know English. We didn't need to know their language. We just all got along. And we close our show. I like to do covers, reimagined covers, I call them,
okay,
of some of the great British invasion artists. So we close all the time with a song by Jimi Hendrix. It's our version of a Jimi Hendrix song called Fire. And I kind of figured that nobody in Serbia is going to really know that song. Well, I was totally wrong. They're all singing along to that song, okay? Just shows you again how international the whole thing is.
Now, hold on a sec. You said British invasion artist, but you're doing Jimi Hendrix.
Well, he was the same era, you know.
Okay.
I don't know if you know the story.
He was bigger over there than he was here.
He went there as, you know, before he was known. The guy that actually made him into Jimi Hendrix was this fella named Chaz Chandler. Chaz Chandler was the bass player for a band called The Animals.
I know The
Remember
Animals.
Remember The Animals?
Absolutely.
Eric Burdon and The Animals. And then they brought him back to the United States, and he became Jimi Hendrix, and, you know, the rest is history. He was a fabulous player.
Well, he really wasn't. Even if you get into that, it took the documentary about Woodstock and his rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner for people to go, oh, wait a sec, who is this guy? And really gravitate towards his music and start getting – it's almost like, the blues singer, Crossroads, not Jack Johnson. Robert Johnson. I'm thinking Jack Johnson, the boxer. But right. Robert Johnson was of the same ilk. Nobody really knew who he was, and that was – I love music. I love music like, see – you and talking to you, Robert, and hearing your story and knowing that you're doing this. I was the kid who picked up a guitar and went, bow, and it like never, I was like this, I'm so bad at this. But I did sing in high school. For all of you that like the sounds of this silky voice, I used to sing on a fairly regular basis. I'm a big fan of Phantom of the Opera. But I sang, so because I couldn't play an instrument.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's just – I'm so impressed by it. So we've been doing this now – what? How many years have you been doing this now? Almost eight?
With the band?
With the band, yeah.
Yeah, well, I first formed the band in 2007.
Oh, God. So
and I reformed it in 2015. So it's been about 5-6 years, you know, that I've really been doing it. And that's been the creative side of it. And during the pandemic, of course, we couldn't play together. So we did two things. One is we started to do some videos. The song that you played, I'm Falling Off of the World, we did as one of those Zoom videos, you know, with each person in a separate little box, and we're all kind of lip syncing and lip playing, but it did really well. And then we took three more songs from the album that we had just released just before the world fell apart. Again, that album is called East Side Sessions. And we put out those videos. And then I needed to do something else. So I started writing more material. And we had normally recorded by putting us all into a studio together after rehearsing like crazy. But you couldn't do that during the pandemic. So we started to record remotely. And I put an album together over the summer that I released just about a month or so ago called Summer of Love 2020. That was my, I call it my debut solo album, because I made the decision that I was going to sing all the songs on the album. So even though I have a fantastic female singer and I love her and she's great, I said, you know what? These songs are very personal. I couldn't get into the studio with everybody, so I decided I'm going to sing them myself. And thankfully, the reviews have been pretty good. So that was a great way to spend the summer. And then I just did a second album that I've recorded remotely again that I'm going to release probably sometime in the late spring of this year. Haven't made up a name for it yet, but it's a continuation of things. So, you know, the point is that you just came up with a name. What's that?
A continuation of things. how great of an album title would that be for your second one? You have Summer of Love. Yeah. 2020, and then you have your second album, a continuation of things. All I need is a little blurb.
I'm going to save that one. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's what we'll do.
I think that would be such a great, especially because, you know, it's jazz. It's not about the notes you play. It's about the notes you don't play. You know, it's all about that. So now, is there, when you set off on this, other than the fact like, hey, look, I enjoy playing music. I've been doing it for all these years. Was there ever a goal where you were like, when I start this, you know, I'll know it's good to go because I've had 5 people listen to my album? Or was it like, hey, I'll know we've hit our right spot because I got a Grammy nomination? What is it?
It was one of two things. Either I was going to get a call from Eric Clapton or I was going to get a call from Ed Sullivan.
If Ed Sullivan calls you, let's understand. there's other things going on. There's a lot else going on. There's some other things, and you might be listening to our other old guest Patty from Ghost Adventures, and Patty may have channeled that for you and brought you Ed Sullivan. But
you're right. That would be unusual. No, I didn't have a set goal. I didn't say, you know, I have one target, and if I get to that target, that's it. I'm out of here. This was something that was building in me for many, many years. This is what I always wanted to do. You know, almost everybody that in the world goes into something like music when they're 20 years old. I mean, that's, you know, the Stones and the Beatles and all those bands, everybody that's out there, Billy Joel, Elton John, they became stars in their 20s. And I was doing other things and I couldn't do it. And
Hold on. You've never said to me, Robert, what were you doing for all these other years?
I was looking around for ways to get into music. Come on. That's what I was doing.
Well, what was your career path?
No, you know, I'll tell you, and don't hold this against me, but I became a lawyer.
Look, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, well, most people have some kind of joke or something that they make about lawyers, and most of them are true. But anyway, you know, the thing is, I like that. No, the thing is, here's how it happened. When I graduated college, I had a degree in broadcasting. I was kind of doing what you were doing, but on the radio at the time. And I got myself a job at a public television station up in the Boston area. And I had what I thought was a great life. I was doing the public television station during the day and I was playing music at night. There was only one problem. If I made $100 a week between the two, it was a lot. And I said, wait a minute, this is not a sustainable lifestyle. So a friend of mine in a moment of severe weakness and depression said to me, well, why don't you go to law school? And I said, well, why would I do that? And he said, well, you could do law during the day and you could play music at night. And being a stupid, you know, 20-year-old, I said, yeah, that sounds good. Why not? And of course, it didn't work out that way at all. Okay. You know, because if you do something like being a lawyer, you're spending 24 hours a day doing that stuff. And the true story is that I stopped playing music for 15 years.
Just stopped.
I couldn't do it. I was married. I had kids. I was a lawyer. I didn't love what I was doing. I wanted to play music, but you know, how do you just stop in the middle of this? And I 1 year turned into two, into five, you know, and finally I was out of it for like 15 years and I was miserable about it. I said, wait a minute, this whole thing went the wrong way. How did this happen? And a couple of lucky things and unlucky things then occurred. The first lucky thing was somebody introduced me to what I call a musician's dating service. In New York City at the time, there used to be this outfit that musicians, like part-time musicians, would go down there. And if you said, I want to play Led Zeppelin's third album, Second Side, they would find like three other idiots that wanted to play the same album. And that's how I got back into music, okay? I started going down to this place and I'd start to play and then I was practicing and all of that. And that was great. And even from that, I actually recorded an album and, you know, it was cool. I was back into it and all of that. And then along the way, I had this really bad accident. I was riding my bicycle and I got hit by a van. And long story short, I wound up with a broken neck. Life
broke your neck.
Make you get onto a certain track more than a near-death experience. And that's what I had. You know, I was just, holy, it was just shit. Dumb luck that I survived the thing, because I could have easily either been dead or paralyzed, you know, like a guy like Christopher Reeve. But it just didn't happen that way. And I said, okay, I'm obviously been put on this earth to do something else. And that's what, again, pushed me in the direction of finally saying, I got to find a way to do music the way I wanted to do it. And that was the prelude to this whole thing that I talked about earlier about Project Grand Slam.
That's so amazing. So, I mean, we all hear about people, oh, I had a near-death experience and I did this, that, or other. But I don't think I've ever met anyone who really could say, you know, man, like I snapped my neck, van hit me. I have to change my path and go do something for me now that I want to do, not because, you know, I got to put food on the table or I got to do this, that, or the other. I've got that part covered. That's, you know, incredible.
It's like the pandemic in the sense that I think the pandemic has made everybody more in touch with their mortality. Because you know what? A lot of old people died, but so did young people. And people have gotten sick and they've got the long hauler thing, you know, where people are having these symptoms that are terrible going on and on and on. Well, I had that in an earlier time. I broke my neck. I mean, I should be dead. I really should. My doctor, in fact, said to me, let me tell you how lucky you were. Your neck exploded on impact, but none of the shrapnel touched your cord. And that's the only reason I'm still talking to you. So holy, I said, shit. Okay, if I'm that lucky, if it was that fortunate, or if it was the, you know, the big person above, I need to do something. It's pointed me in a certain direction. And it's not a religious experience. It's more right. A realization that, hey, we only go around once in life.
Well, Robert, this is for you. That's what happens when you hit the wrong button. I was not meant to laugh at Robert
first.
It wasn't meant to be a laugh. It was supposed to be this. Wow, Robert,
so
that
listen,
is incredible.
This is actually how it's led into the podcast for me, because I decided that I had a story that nobody else really had. I mean, how many people do you know that went into music full time when they were in their 60s and actually succeeded? I mean, it's a young person's game.
Right.
And I said to myself, okay, you know what? I followed my dream and I've been successful and I'm so lucky. How can I help others follow their dream? Because you know what? Everybody's got a dream. And most people are not following up on their dream because same reasons that I didn't.
Right.
You fall into things. Life tends to get in the way. And you turn around and all of a sudden you're not doing what you thought you were going to do. And you're not happy, but you're kind of trapped and you want to do other things. But, you know, how do you do it? And there's so many hours in the day. And it's the same story that we all have. But I felt if I could start this podcast and I could talk with other people that have been successful, if I could come up with a methodology, I said to myself, all right, how did I do it? What was it that I did? It's not like I set out and I read a book and I said, this is how you're going to do it. And I came up with this little theory that I call my dream theory. May I tell you about it?
Absolutely. Robert, you have me fully intrigued here right now because, again, like I said, I mean, you are the epitome of that idea of, you know, don't let your dreams disappear. Don't let them fall off. So what is your dream theory here?
So I said, okay, I need to do this in a bite-sized manner so that people can understand what I'm talking about. So I used the word dream, D-R-E-A-M. So the D, of course, stands for dream. Everybody has one. You may have forgotten what yours was, but I always believe that we think with our gut. And in your gut, you know exactly what it is that turns you on when you were younger, or that turns you on now, or that you always wanted to do. And it doesn't have to be as big as what I was doing. It could be, you know, a new hobby. It could be a new business. It could be anything. But you need a dream. And the R stands, in my view, for realistic. What does that mean? Well, let's face it. Not every dream is realistic. If I had decided when I was 60 years old that I wanted to be the next great, you know, Major League Baseball pitcher.
Right.
Unless I was Satchel Paige, that was not going to happen. Okay. And some might say, well, wait a minute, Miller, what made you think that it was realistic to go into music at that point in your life? And I said, well, you know, I thought I could do it. So, and it turned out it was realistic, but you have to be somewhat realistic in your expectations. The E of dream, I think, is the most important thing. To me, it's execute. And by that, I mean, I think you need an action plan. Everything in life is benefited by having an action plan, you know, a series of little baby steps. So when you decide you want to do something, it's one thing to just say, gee, I'd love to do something in my life. A wish without an action plan is nothing, okay? But with an action plan, you can actually resolve things and accomplish things. So I actually put together the first 5 or 10 steps that I thought I was going to need to take when I wanted to be in music. I wrote them down on a napkin. I was in a bar and I wrote it down on a napkin. And I said, okay, if I'm going to do this, what do I need? Well, I have to write some music. I have to get people in the band. I have to decide how I'm going to do this, where I'm going to do it, what makes sense. I had a plan. The A of dream is for adjust. And by that, I mean, there's no such plan in the world that's a straight line. Every plan is one step forward, 2 steps back, 3 steps sideways. I always like to quote Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight champ, when he was asked, do you have a plan of action when you go into the ring? He said, yeah, everybody's got a plan of action until they get hit in the face.
So true. It is
okay?
A fact.
You know, listen, the life is such that we all face hurdles. We all face obstacles. And the point is that if you've made a decision to go for it, you can't let those hurdles, those obstacles get in the way. There's always a way around them or over them or something you can do to get, you know, further down the path of what you want. And the last part of it is M, measure. By that, I mean, every dream, no matter what the dream is, big, small, or indifferent, there are measurements to say, are you successful? You know, I knew what I needed to do in music. If I started playing music to crowds and everybody was booing us and walking out, I would be getting kind of a measurement from the crowd.
Right. I guess this isn't working.
Best way to do it. And you know what? Every dream will have different forms of measurement. And by the way, it doesn't mean that if you're not successful in your dream that you're a failure. Because in my mind, it's all about the journey. It's all about the decision to go for it. And I said to myself, I didn't want to look back on my life and say, you know, why didn't I ever try? Everybody, you need to try. You need to give it a shot. If you do, you know what you get from that, Sean? You get happiness and inner contentment and satisfaction. Even if at the end of the day, it doesn't work out, you're a success because you feel like you're a success. That's my message.
Robert, this is episode 42. And you know what 42 is. Let's see if Jeanette's still listening. She'll tell us what 42, but do you know what 42 is?
Well, I was going to say it was Jackie Robinson's number.
It is Jackie Robinson's number. But if you ever paid attention to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and at the beginning of it, they talk about the meaning of life, and the computer goes for all these millions of years, and they come up with number 42 as the meaning of their look. This is why I love her. It's the meaning of life. Episode 42, and you just answered it all for all of us. I have to tell you, I even created a banner while you were talking. Thank you, Jeanette. I knew you'd know what 42 was. It's a very English thing, but I put this right up as soon as you said it. A wish without an action plan is nothing. That is, folks, if you never take anything from another one of my shows and my silliness and the stuff we've done in the past, Robert, that is probably one of the most profound things I've heard in, I couldn't tell you how long, but just that statement, a wish without an action plan is nothing. And folks, you've said so many things here, and the what COVID has kind of taught us, folks. I talked about it last week. We just got off of COVID protocols at my house at the end of February. My wife had it. I had it, you know, and we didn't have it that bad. My wife had a little bit more of a touch than I did, but we didn't have it super bad. But I've known people that, like you said, the residuals. But without COVID, I'm not on episode 42. I'm not, because it caused my work schedule to change. It caused me to change up my plans. I'm home more often. I'm kind of twiddling my thumbs a little bit. And I went, my wife was the one. She was like, you like this stuff. You enjoy this. I listen to podcasts. I have the Podfather. We're on the Earplug Network. He brought me onto his network. It's a good friend of mine. And we talked about it. And here I am 40 some episodes into it. And I know I'm kind of talking about myself, but you really nailed that on the head. And so many of us are told, you know, and I've caught myself. It's funny. God, I'm just thinking about it. I've caught myself, and you may have even done it as a parent. You know, how many kids do you have, Robert?
If 2.
You don't mind me. So you have 2. I have way more than that.
I got some grandkids too, so we'll throw those in.
I have 8 children between my wife and I, and we have 3 grandchildren. And then we'll be bringing Rick's – hey, sidebar, Rick's coming back next week. Richard Cranium will be back next week. His plans have changed, and we want to say happy birth to Bryce Lee Webb. He named him Bryce after number one on Star Trek. You there? Did I lose you? I lost him. Look at that. Are you frozen?
No, nope. I'm here. Don't worry.
I thought I lost you there for a second.
No.
But it's just all the stuff you're talking about. You know, I've said to my children, why are you going to do that? It doesn't make any money. You're not going to have no money in your pocket if you go and do that. And I'm just listening to you. I've really, not even realizing it, I've told my children not to follow their dreams of what they want to do, what they think is going to be good for them. Because in my mind, life has gotten in the way of me already. and what I need to do and the bills I need to pay and telling them, don't follow your dreams because you got to pay bills.
We all go through that. Okay. We tell ourselves any number of reasons and rationales why we shouldn't do things. And we justify not doing things in that fashion. And at the end of the day, what is it that gives us the most pleasure? It's not only following a dream, but it's following your passion. Okay. And look, there are times when your passion doesn't lead to making a living. I totally get that. All
it
right.
It didn't help you at first.
That's exactly right. You know, sometimes you got to put your passion aside, or you have to develop something else that'll pay the bills. But I keep saying you get to a point in life. It's not when you're 20 or you're 30, but it's sometime after you get past 50 where you finally realize, wait a minute, I'm only going around once. And if I don't do what I wanted to do now, when am I going to do it? And Jeanette is saying life is short, and she's right. It's true. And something like COVID, again, hits you right over the head how short life is and how we're never guaranteed tomorrow. Right?
I'm with you.
All those people that passed away, I feel so terrible for them. None of them thought they were going to pass away from a virus. None of them thought this was going to happen to them. They didn't plan for this. It just happened. Okay. Life throws you curveballs, throws you lemons. And you just have to say to yourself, what's important to me and what do I want to do with the time that I've got? And how do I help the people around me? So I play music and I now have this podcast, and I look at them as kind of two sides of the same coin, because they're both creative exercises. What you're doing is creative, and what I'm trying to do in my podcast is creative, and they're both uplifting. And that's what I want to do.
That's awesome, brother. Like, look, I'll hit the right button. like Robert, I love it. And now we've been a little philosophical. I would want to make a hard left here. So now here's the next thing. What is for you and for your band? Now, I will tell you, I want to see you at Saratoga, at Jazz Fest in Saratoga. I think that would be so often. And it's really a little bit of selfish, because if you come to Jazz Fest in Saratoga, you'll probably make me the coolest guy in the neighborhood, because then I'll ask you for tickets and see if you can get us backstage. And my wife will like love the entire fact of it. And she's listening right now, so she knows that like I'm already pitching this entire thing. So just know that that's out there. I'm throwing
that
out there.
All right, that sounds good. But well, what's listen, your I can get play? You halfway there, and I get your wife halfway there.
Look, wait a second. Wait, hold on, Robert. Like, wait a sec. Did you just say only my wife can come backstage?
Exactly. Come on. I want to have some fun here. I mean, you're okay, but your wife has got to be spectacular.
Oh, my wife is a beautiful woman. Look, let's see if we can. She made a comment because she called you a walking miracle. There she is in that little tiny picture.
Hey, April.
Standing next to my schlubness right there. So for shows to play, and I know, look, playing the Grammys for probably every musician, I don't care if you played a kazoo, playing the Grammys would be the pinnacle at that point, or playing like an entire sold out stadium. But for yourself and in the industry of music that you're in, she says hello, Robert.
Hey.
Look, you guys can't have your own sidebar entire conversation as my show. Stop Sean, trying to steal my
Sean,
show.
Sean, will you shut up, please? April, I want you backstage with me, April.
What would be like, is there for you, so you've gotten this far, the millions of downloads, all those kind of things. Is there like, hey, I really want to play Carnegie Hall, or since you are in Albany or in New York, I want to play the Egg. You know, is there a place that you want to play, or like, hey, I would love to have, like, because of the type of music you do, I would love to have Sade sing with us. I'm a big Sade fan. Uh-huh. I feel like if between Barry White, Marvin Gaye, or Sade, somebody can't love you, you just aren't lovable.
That's probably true. Look, I don't have a specific place or goal. I love to play live, and I love to play festivals and concerts, and I'm waiting for the world to come back. We do have one gig on the horizon that's now been confirmed.
Where's that?
And it's not in Saratoga, but it's not that far away. It's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
I know it well.
Music Fest.
I know that.
We're playing Music Fest. We've played there twice before, and we're playing again on June 27th.
June 27th, Music Fest in Bethlehem.
It's a Sunday, and I want to see April and you if you have to come. And I'm going to have you backstage, and I'm going to have the whole thing that you just talked about, but we're going to do it at this time in Bethlehem. How's that?
It sounds like a plan. I'll have my shot by then. She'll have her shot. We'll be able to be around other human beings.
I think it's all going to be social distancing. I'm not sure exactly how they're doing it, but they called me up not too long ago, and they said the thing is actually going to be on this year. And we found a date when everybody can do it. So I'm excited because we haven't played a live gig in over a year. And that's for a musician. That's, you know, it's like pulling your intestines out or something. I mean, it's awful. But this gives me something to focus on. And I've got the band all, you know, revved up for this. And we're going to, you know, go back into the rehearsal studio at some point and get really ready for this. Although I kind of feel like as soon as we start playing together again, it'll just, you know, come out the way it's supposed to come out. You know,
like it's the bicycle.
That's exactly right. You just don't forget. And these are such great musicians. But really and truly, I'd love to have you and your wife and maybe some other people from your audience here.
Well,
get in touch with me and we'll get them some tickets and we'll get you set up and we'll have you at Music Fest. And it's a beautiful setting. I don't know if you remember it, but it's the stage is set against the backdrop of these old abandoned steel mills. And it's an awesome thing. So you see these steel stacks going up 50 feet in the air, and it's a beautiful, beautiful setting.
So for those of you who don't know where Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is, it's eastern Pennsylvania near Allentown, like the song, which was actually not really about Allentown. It was about Scranton, but Scranton doesn't sound as good as Allentown in that song. But Bethlehem was Bethlehem Steel. It was the steel industry. And now it's casinos, and you can do walk-arounds and buy, because they've redone it and made it safe to go inside of it. Some of the guys I work with are big rail fans, and it's an amazing place. But when I was in the Marine Corps, and I was in charge of a recruiting station, the first ever recruiting station I was in charge of was the Allentown station, and I was responsible for Bethlehem. So I had Allentown and Bethlehem. So I know that area very, very well. That is amazing. And Music Fest was a show we used to do, and we would set up like a pull-up challenge and all kinds of stuff over there. That's incredible.
Yep.
So we're
on for that.
Well, we will absolutely talk. Sorry for looking away for a moment. One of my random cats decided to tap me on the leg and be like, "Dad, what about us going to Music Fest? You're not coming."
Bring the cat too. Oh, no problem.
No, he's sitting at the end of the bar now with his back to me like, "What, I can't go?" This is my life, folks. The animals, the children, everything that comes around. So Robert, we're going to get ready to kind of put a bow on this thing here in a moment. But I have to tell you, this is probably, like I said, episode 42. I'm going to call this one the meaning of life with Robert Meller and the Project Grand Slam, because you definitely informed us. You definitely educated us. We know we can find you now June 27th, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. We have plenty of fans in Pennsylvania. We have people down there in New York. It's not a far drive from where I'm at. I think Bethlehem from Albany area where we're at is probably right about 3 hours or so at the most. Because you're just going to go down and hook a right on 287 and keep heading on out. Where, you know, download wise, we know we can all download your stuff. I put it up here a moment ago. Yes, my love, you are 42 and you're the meaning of my life. As April says, we won't forget you. Yes, my wife wants everyone to know she is the meaning of my life. We can find you at projectgrandslam.com.
Yep.
The podcast is Follow Your Dreams Podcast, and the website is followyourdreamspodcast.com, correct?
One small correction. It's correct Follow me. Your Dream Podcast.
Follow Your Dream.
Yeah, singular, because we don't want to be greedy here. We'll give you one dream per
person.
You get
one. One and done.
the podcast actually launches on the 15th of March. And I'm so pleased with how I've got this lined up. My first guest on the podcast is somebody that maybe you know.
Maybe.
Cousin Brucey.
Really? You got Cousin Brucey?
Cousin Brucey.
From Philadelphia.
Cousin Brucey is the most famous radio personality in America. This guy's been on the air for 50 plus years. He started off on WABC in New York in the 60s. He went to WCBS-FM, which was the rock and roll station for a decade or more. Then he went to Sirius XM, where he was been on the air for, I don't know, another decade or something like that. Now he's back on WABC. He's the guy that introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium. I mean, that's what this guy represents. So he's my first guest on the podcast. I also have Mindy Hebert, who's a two-time Grammy nominated saxophonist, incredible musician and personality. I also have Sandy Shore, who's the founder and CEO of Smooth Jazz Global, which is a huge platform for smooth jazz music. And a buddy of mine from college named George Schweitzer, who for 30 years was the head of marketing at CBS and tells a story about how broadcasting has just changed tremendously over the past 30, 40 years. So it's a nice slate of people that are coming out. And as I said, the podcast launches on the 15th of March, and would love to have as many of your people as possible come and listen and subscribe and all of that stuff. And anyway, that's what's happening with my life.
15 March, go check it out. That is awesome. You got Cousin Brucey. like that's like, you know, I can remember Wolfman Jack.
That's right.
You know,
you're same level.
You're on that level of folks that, you know, were a national icon for radio broadcast when it was all terrestrial. They were some of the first folks to ever be syndicated and to go global. But that's so cool. Like, that's one of those ones, like, you got, like, I know who Cousin Brucey is. That's so awesome.
And there was a time when there were three rock and roll stations on the AM dial in New York. You had Bruce on WABC. You had Murray the K. I don't know if your audience knows him. Murray the K was also a giant of the radio industry. He was on WINS. And then on WMCA, you had the Good Guys, they call themselves. And it was like a battle between all three. This is before FM radio. It's before Sirius XM, before all this stuff. There was no such thing as the internet. Everybody was listening on that little transistor radio.
Oh, that's so cool. I have to tell you, like, those are definitely some cool guests. Folks, make sure you take some time and you check those things out. You have the Project Grand Slam. They're all over iTunes, anywhere where you can download music. You're going to be able to find Project Grand Slam. I know I looked them up. I double checked everything. Also, folks, if you're enjoying what we're doing right here, please take your time. Check us out on Instagram. Now, you guys have an Instagram, don't you? That's Project Grand Slam on Instagram, right?
You betcha.
So check out the Instagram Project Grand Slam. Have you made one for the podcast yet?
Yes, we have. You know, it's again, Follow Your Dream Podcast on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You know, you got to be everywhere these days. So
that's it.
That's the deal.
One of our prior guests, Sean Welch, if he owns California Comfort Barbecue, they actually have gotten very into the whole ghost kitchen thing. Uh-huh. Him and I were talking about exactly that. I said he interviewed a guy who's got like 4 million followers on something and all this other stuff. And he said, I don't do business with people who don't have an internet presence. If you don't have a social media presence, I don't do business with you, because that means you don't care. And that's the world we live in today. So you can find them all on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. We're following them. If you look at who we're following, you'll find them also in those places. If you're one of our wonderful 4 listeners, please take the time and check us out on Instagram. Our Instagram is at Above the Bar Podcast. Twitter is Above the Bar 4. We have our email, which is the Above the Bar Podcast at gmail.com. We have our Facebook, which is the Above the Bar Podcast. We're now our new parent network here. We've networked ourselves with the Podfather. You definitely can check us out on Earplug Network. This show will be up. You have The Daily Show with DW. You have Grindhouse. You have RSRG. You can go figure that out once you listen to them, what each of those letters mean. We have all those shows. Please take the time. Make sure you check those out. And we have our new mantra here, which is a wish without an action plan is nothing. Keep that in mind, folks. You got to take the time. You got to figure out what's going to matter to you. And then the last thing is, where none of you spend any money whatsoever, and only I spend all the money here, which is our TeePublic site. Take the time. If you go on TeePublic, I'll keep throwing this out here. Go on to TeePublic, look up the Above the Bar Podcast, all your gear, anything you want. It's all on there. And again, like we started the show with a sticker and a cause. This is my new thing. My wife and I came up with it. If you have something that matters to you and it's got a sticker, send me the sticker. Send me a little bit about it. I'll read it at the beginning of the show. I'll tell everybody about it, and we'll put your sticker up on the clock. And then everybody will get to see it each week. All four of my listeners will check out your sticker. Robert, you get the last word of the day. Oh, and Robert, when we're done this, we're going to go into the green room. Don't log off on me. Robert, you get the last comment of today.
Hey, it's been a gas to do this, really. You guys, you're terrific, and I love the whole gestalt that you got going on here.
Get a good gestalt. Get a little bit of Yiddish. A little Yiddish at the end of the show, a little gestalt.
That's right.
All righty, folks, be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.